This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. A lot to talk about today. So much has happened since the last time I chatted to you. But just let's start with some snippets from the funeral yesterday in Beirut. Of course, Hassan Nasrallah, the former leader of Hezbollah, was buried yesterday in Beirut. Tens of thousands of people turned up at the funeral, and there was a lot of action around the edges. Israel carrying out attacks in southern Lebanon just at the time that the funeral began, carrying out justified attacks, not just any old attacks in order to prove a point, but carrying out attacks against Hezbollah terrorists who were clearly transgressing the agreement, the ceasefire agreement, the truce agreement that's in place at the moment between Israel and Lebanon / Hezbollah, because in fact Lebanon and Hezbollah are really all part of the truce agreement. But I think the most telling sight was the sight of Israeli F-16s and F-35s flying very, very low over the stadium where the funeral was taking place in Beirut, clearly visible to the naked eye and clearly visible to the tens of thousands of people in the audience in Beirut. At one point, there were even sonic booms which were heard over Beirut as a message to Hezbollah operatives, Hezbollah terrorists and other supporters that Israel is very, very close by, and that there's no possible way that they can avoid what might be the inevitable coming their way. We saw how clinically the Hamas leadership and the Hezbollah leadership, in particular in Beirut, were taken out of action. And that threat, of course, continues to exist for the people who still follow Hezbollah. All of this has created a lot of conflict within Lebanon between those who are continue to be supporters of Hezbollah and those who understand that Hezbollah are on the wrong side of history, and they are the people who prevent peace from being possible in that part of the world. But overall, a very interesting day. And of course, there were some planes that landed from Iran, one of which was even piloted by an Iranian senior politician, an Iranian member of the regime, who is a pilot, and he piloted the Iranian plane, landed in Beirut to come for the funeral. So that all took place yesterday, seemingly without incident in the end.
Yeah, and I see that Mandla Mandela was there, the gift that keeps on giving.
Right, exactly. So the messages, I think, were clear. Everybody understood. They allowed Nasrallah to be buried, and we are moving on to the next stage, and there will be a lot to move on to.
I don't really understand this. I thought in terms of Muslim law, a person had to be buried very, very quickly. This is a significant amount of time after he was killed.
I think that the rules around surrounding burial are very, very similar to those that govern burial in the Jewish religion. Mm. And of course, it took some time for them even to be able to extract the bodies from the rubble of the bunker where they were killed.
I'd say so pretty much was buried.
Almost immediately, yeah. And in fact, there are stories that suggest that he might not even have been killed by the initial attack, but that he might well have eventually suffocated in that bunker, because it was noticeable that after the attack took place, the IDF made every effort to keep potential rescuers away from the area, suspecting that there might be people who had survived the initial attack and that people might try to rescue them. And there was a huge operation launched by the IDF to prevent rescuers from getting to the site for some days after the initial attack took place, to make sure that those who might not have been killed in the initial attack eventually would perish under the rubble, because nobody could get to them to rescue them. And so it's unclear exactly into which category Nasrallah falls, but one thing we know for sure is that whatever it was, it was according to the plans of the IDF and the Mossad, who of course had been following him in those bunkers for many, many years and had good information that they'd gathered up over decades probably, which was supplied to the IDF at the time that the attack took place. They had such a lot of information. They had all the coordinates, they had the maps, they had the movements, they had all the details, that it was just a case of pushing the button to allow the operation to go ahead, literally like that.
Amazing. Six Israeli hostages were released over the weekend amidst great drama. Let's just talk about the sequence of events that led up to the release.
Well, the last time I spoke to you was even before the release of the bodies of the Bibas family.
Correct. That was happening as we ended the show. So, yeah. Take us back.
Right. So let's just roll back. The ceremony that took place where the four coffins were handed over was something that I think will be ingrained in our collective memories for a very long time as a real insult, not only to the memories of the four people who were being handed over, but it just, the insults went on and on and on. Four coffins displayed on this huge stage with a massive poster showing Netanyahu with these kind of vampire teeth and blood running out of his mouth, encapsulating the pictures of the four individuals, the four Israeli hostages who were released. The coffins were finally handed over, each coffin with a picture of the person who was purported to be inside, and with a message saying, arrested on October the 7th, like as if though they were criminals who had been arrested for some crime that they'd committed, especially the two babies, the two children, a toddler and a baby. Of course, they were arrested as well for crimes that they'd committed. Of course, I say that facetiously because there could be nothing more ridiculous than that. So the four coffins were then individually returned to Israel and were immediately taken to the Forensics Institute at Abu Kabir. A ceremony was held when the coffins were first taken possession of by the IDF in order to give the four victims the right level of respect. There were throngs of people who lined the roads as the cortege of vehicles passed by on its way to Tel Aviv, flags and a lot of people coming to pay their respects. But the drama was far from over, because when the four bodies were taken to the Forensics Institute and were identified, it turns out that three out of the four bodies were identifiable, meaning Kfir and Ariel Bibas, as well as the body that came back along with them, whose name now for some reason has just escaped me, but they were all properly identified. But when it came to Shiri Bibas, then the Forensics Institute announced that that was not her body. And so the message went out to Hamas on Friday to say, you have not abided by the agreement, and there is all help going to break loose. That was effectively the message that was going out on Friday. As we were preparing for the release of the six hostages on Saturday, and the names of those six hostages were communicated as if though everything was going according to plan, and yet the government was horrified, as we understand was the Trump administration, that the body of Shiri Bibas, the coffin that was supposed to carry the body of Shiri Bibas, was carrying an unknown Gazan woman's remains, not those of Shiri Bibas at all. So to accelerate the story and just to move forward, late on Friday evening, a body was released to the Red Cross by Hamas, which they claim was the body of Shiri Bibas. And in fact, the members of staff of the Forensics Institute at Abu Kabir were out late on Friday evening, were brought in to have a look at the body that was released and was received, and managed to confirm that Shiri Bibas, indeed, her remains were in the coffin, the fifth coffin that was sent for examination, which seemed to kind of calm the situation down a little, except for the fact that the information was being released about how the Bibas family actually died. And of course, the message goes out that the way that they died was not at all by virtue of Israeli attacks, but rather that they died at the hands, at the bare hands of Hamas terrorists, insinuating that the two children were probably strangled, as far as we understand, and potentially Shiri Bibas the same, and that there was then an attempt afterwards to somehow mutilate their bodies to make it look as if though they had been killed by some missile attack of some sort, rather than the reality of how they were killed. Now, further information suggests that Israeli intelligence knew this information already for some time. In fact, very, very soon after they were killed, which we are now told was about, what was probably within the first month of the war, that they were actually killed by this extremist group, not even Hamas, but another extremist group within Gaza. And we understand that that intelligence was known to our intelligence community already quite early on during the war. But once they'd been brought to the Forensics Institute and their bodies had been examined, it was felt appropriate to release the information about exactly how they were killed. And as I say, most of that information came rather than from forensics, it rather came from intelligence information which we had gathered during the course of the war. So we now have those four bodies safely back in our possession. The release on Saturday went almost as planned, but again, so much cynicism and so much bad behavior, bad form, when especially first of all, Tal and Avera Mengistu were the first ones to be released. Let's not forget that Avera Mengistu had been in Hamas captivity for more than 10 years, and he was alongside Hisham al-Sayed, two Israelis who had been mentally unwell before taking themselves into Gaza and being kept in Gaza for more than 10 years. So Tal and Avera came out, both safely, both walking with seemingly fully functional. They were taken to hospital, as is now the regular procedure, first of all to meet their families just outside the Gaza border area, and then taken to hospital. Then we had the release of Elia, Omer, and Omer, who were released all together, and such cynical displays on the stage. They were asked to make speeches, and Omer Shem Tov at one stage was asked to kiss the head of one of his Hamas captors. I mean, that was just the most cynical scene to see, him kissing the head and displaying the certificate that they'd been given very, very proudly. Luckily, we see Elia, Omer, and Omer coming home safely and also walking, lost a lot of weight during the time that they were in Gaza, and many, many stories to tell about the mistreatment that they had to suffer while in Gaza. But the story doesn't end there, because Hisham al-Sayed, who of course is a Bedouin Israeli, was released separately, not with the whole stage procedures, proceedings, and with the whole production around, but he was released just quietly to the Red Cross somewhere in southern Gaza, and that was supposedly to show some respect on the part of Hamas towards the Bedouin community, which is their way, I think, of admitting that the production that they go through on the stage is a sign of disrespect. If what they're trying to do is show respect to Hisham's family, then they're showing disrespect to everybody else. So he was released. We understand from Hisham and Avera's families that they are what they call unresponsive. So they were already unwell before this whole episode, but they are apparently terrible. Unresponsive now. Absolutely that they've been released. More than that, what we're seeing is that the other hostages, none of whom are in particularly good health, but are somehow managing to function. The drama, however, didn't end there, and far from ended there, because what then happened was that there were the pictures released of two Israeli hostages who had been taken to the scene of the release and who'd been shown the release in real time, but were not released. And I don't know that you can get much more cynical than that.
I just keep thinking, do they have a cruelty department where they sit and they try and work out how to be torturous? How do they? Because every single release, they come up with something that
new.
Shocks us.
Yeah, something new. Yeah. So this was Eviad David and Guy Gilboa Dalal, who then Hamas sent a video showing them watching the release of fellow Israelis, but they're being kept in Hamas captivity. How evil can you get? Well, the response of the Israeli government, and we've already run out of time and we've got a lot to talk about, the response of the Israeli government was not to release the Palestinian prisoners in response to all of that. And those Palestinian prisoners, some 300 of them or more, who should have been released on Saturday, are still not released. The Israeli government is holding them and saying that Israel is not to tolerate this kind of production and this kind of disrespect that's being shown to Israel and being shown to the hostages each and every time hostages are being released. So we'll have to end at that moment, even though we've already run over, because there's still a great deal that we can talk about, and we'll pick it up tomorrow. Yeah. But that's really the current status of where we're at.
Incredible. And yeah, definitely tomorrow I want to talk about this terror attack, or the intended terror attack. There's definitely not a lot of information around it, and I'd like to try and understand how this fits into the bigger picture. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, you can catch Anthony Reich for the Israel Report tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.